So, retrospectors, what historical events are we ticking off on this week's run of Today in History?
Well, Tuesday is the anniversary of the first Tarzan movie to hit the silver screen.
Then on Wednesday, we tell the story of how Gottlieb Daimler inadvertently invented the motorbike.
On Thursday, we explain how MSG got demonized in the 1960s.
And on Friday, we revisit a legendary battle on a frozen Russian lake.
We discuss this and more on Today in History with the retrospectors. 10 minutes each weekday, wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hello and welcome to another bonus edition of the Media Podcast. We're back with a proper show next week, but in the meantime, take a listen to this. Owen Rich, innovations producer with the BBC World Service. He spoke to the Media Podcast about his particular area of expertise, drones. Those little mini helicopters controlled from the ground that have become another tool in television's armoury. And we'll also hear from last week's guests, Liz Howell and Leon Wilson, with their take on the technology. But first, here's Owen.
My name is Owen Rich and I'm an innovations producer with the Global Video Unit, which is part of the World Service. So my favourite shot that we've done with the copters is the shot we got of the Christ the Redeemer statue in Rio. It was before the World Cup. We went out there to make a series that was going to be running during the tournament. We got up really early in the morning, got there about 3 a.m. Before any members of the public would ever be there. We had an area completely cordoned off and we got the copter up, not that high away from me, but you know, the shot itself looks like it was very high, and it was up in the clouds. It was a very sort of murky day, but that gave it an extra sense of perspective. It was very sort of interesting, like you were floating in the clouds. And I was kind of pleased with the perspective we got on such a sort of iconic thing you've seen a lot of times, but not necessarily from that angle. So the way we work is we work as a two-person team. So I fly the craft and I have also a camera operator who controls the camera, and they are receiving a video downlink from the craft, which allows them to see what they're getting, and they have full control 360 degrees of that camera. But really, it's like any piece of equipment, like a jib or Steadicam or working with a focus puller or anything like that. You really need to have, you know, developed a working partnership with that person, so that when you do something like I fly up in the air and I want the camera operator to tilt down and track an object, we need to work in tandem. So we do practice, and you really see an improvement as you get further, more practiced at it. You can see a real improvement in the things that you can actually get and get a bit more confident and do some slightly more revolving images. So the process starts with planning, and planning is sort of a important part. We have a license which is called a BNUC-S, which is a Civil Aviation Authority permission for aerial work in the UK. That requires us to fulfil certain obligations with regards flight planning. So the first stage is essentially looking at where you're going to fly, whether that be in the UK or overseas. And of course, when you're dealing with a location overseas, which is what we're primarily doing in the Global Video Unit, because being World Service, we travel a lot, you're looking at flight rules in those countries. So you're looking at aerial maps and you're trying to figure out what the actual rules are about flying in that country and how the airspace is managed. So all of our shoots overseas always start with a call to the Civil Aviation Authority in whatever country we're dealing with, and we go from there. We get advice and we see if it's even possible, because certain countries have quite stringent regulations, very progressive and fully formed policy, like Australia, where you essentially would need to translate your qualification through quite a long process into being valid in that country, or a country like Poland, where we were flying recently and we're able to translate our BNUC S qualification to become valid there, which was essentially just getting the okay from the CAA there. Or countries where there are no regulations yet, because this is obviously, of course, a very new technology. So the first aspect is obviously planning, making flight plans and doing a risk assessment. And then obviously trying to get your craft to the country can obviously be a challenge, because there's quite big boxes. But really the creative part starts on the ground when you're looking at what you've got to film. And it's really interesting the way that you learn certain visual tricks. A lot of the best shots are really like they reveal something, you know, unexpected. So one of the shots that we did in the Auschwitz video was we popped up behind one of the gun towers to then reveal the landscape of huts that stretched as far as the eye could see. An unexpected reveal of something which sort of gives you a different perspective. Now the technology is maturing to the point where you're really seeing a difference between those people who are just flying around in the sky and essentially, you know, it's great and the images are unique and interesting, they're new. But as it becomes more commonplace to have these kind of aerial shots, you really see the difference between the filmmakers who are crafting the shots, really understanding filmmaking principles, and the shots which are essentially just aerial shots that you wouldn't have been, perhaps been able to get before. So it's really about now coming to the point where it's like thinking of creatively as well about how you can use those shots and how to kind of involve the audience in them.
That was Owen Rich. Liz Howell from City University London and Leon Wilson from Talkback are with me. Liz, BBC News got into a bit of trouble at Davos, didn't they? What went wrong?
Taking pictures from above. And I mean, really, this raises the whole question of privacy and what you can do and where you can put a camera and so on. And it's very interesting, because if you're filming on a public street, and it is a public street, then you're perfectly free to film and you can film whatever you like, and you get a lot of problems with this with students. And obviously my students go out filming and they're filming on the public highway and people try to move them on and what have you, but they can't, because you've got every right to film on the street.
And
that's when Islington Council might ask you for a small sum of money. But in fact, in terms of privacy, you can film from the street. So the question is, can you film from the air? So,
but there's restrictions obviously on, you know, not bashing into a plane, isn't there? And obviously a lot of people are trying to cut costs, which is what the BBC were doing, yeah. Right? They didn't ask for permission to put something up in the air.
It's not that high up, so it's sort of buzzing along, taking photographs, or, you know, filming from above. And is that legitimate or not? And there's been some very interesting cases about this. For example, in the US, they took aerial photographs down the Californian coast, and some particular celebrity really, really objected to the fact that aerial photographs were being taken of their home and their property. And so is that legitimate or not? I mean, it's something that's going to have to be sorted out. I mean, a row at Davos is just a row about, you know, the drone going over. But it does raise this question about where can you film, what can you see.
Indeed, but it also shows, if even the BBC, who have an army of people to do compliance, didn't bother asking for permission before they put a drone in the air,
to what extent was it a sort of rogue act anyway? We don't really know.
Well, fine, but if that happens under the BBC's provisions, then presumably that really is happening everywhere else.
Absolutely,
from students up. I mean, Leon, at Talkback, have you actually used a drone before?
Yeah, we used a drone last year, on Through the Keyhole.
Uh-huh.
We started using it in Series 2 to sort of give a different view of the houses we were looking at. And they're loads of fun, they're great. They're really quite cheap compared to a helicopter, which is prohibitively expensive. You know, you can get them up there and filmed, you know, we did one with Keith Lemon on a boat in the middle of Lake Windermere. And normally we wouldn't be able to do that, because it would cost, you know, £5,000.
You probably wouldn't get permission to fly.
We wouldn't, no, exactly. Yeah, it would be really hard. So, and it was great. It made for a nice sequence. We had him, you know, in the middle of the lake on his own. It was... I love them. I'm expecting them to be used a lot more.
I was just going to say the same thing.
I think Blue Swimming will be filmed on
drone. Yeah, absolutely. Everything will be filmed.
The thing is, though, are they broadcast quality? Because I know, obviously, they're sold
what
on the basis that the cameras...
Well,
yeah. But that's the question, isn't it?
I mean, you know, you can have Skype interviews, you can have handheld stuff, you can have phone stuff. There's no such thing, I don't think, anymore as technical broadcast quality. There's what people want to see.
Yeah, well, they are, if you get the right ones. And you, generally, with programmes, you're allowed 20% of any of the material in it is allowed to be non-broadcast quality, which is a lot. So 20% can be old SD stuff, you know, and that's just without even asking permission. So
but that's an arbitrary rule anyway.
Even that, yeah, you can get away with more
but
if you're asking
from
permission.
An audience point of view, in a glossy graded show like Through the Keyhole, can you notice that it's taken on a camera that obviously is worth less
you
than
would,
what
yeah,
you
I wouldn't
the
want
the
to use one that wasn't brought the same quality as all the rest of the pictures, the same resolution.
Sometimes the grainy stuff and the rough stuff is actually quite effective. So it depends whether you say what it is or whether you contextualise it in some way. But it's here to stay. In fact, it's going to get bigger, I think. All of this stuff. Pictures are the future. Everybody's wanting more and more moving pictures from more and more angles. And this is just the beginning.
Yeah. Cliff Richard, watch out. You're going to have a drone permanently over your house, never mind the helicopter.
The other thing we use a lot more is GoPro stuff. Yeah. In all kinds, not just in sporting television, but in entertainment television. I think we will start seeing it in things like, for example, The X Factor, where you can actually see the contestants' POV shot during the show and things like that. I think there's a lot more to be done in entertainment television with different types of camera work.
One day we'll all have GoPro strapped to our heads all the time. I'm convinced of it. Yeah.
Well, it sort of turns every contestant into their own personal fixed rig, doesn't it, basically?
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, my thanks to Leon and to Liz and to Owen Rich, of course, as well. Now, pledgers to the Media Podcast can hear an extended version of that interview on our members' website, including how you become a drone operator and some of the kit available. That is at themediapodcast.squarespace.com, where you can also hear the full bug event we played a fortnight ago with Miranda Sawyer and Matt Kelly. Do we get the press we deserve? All of that at themediapodcast.squarespace.com. And if you haven't pledged, but you want to, don't worry. We'll have more details on how you can do that very soon. I've been Ollie Mann, the producer, Matt Hill, and until next week, bye-bye.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.